This is Phil Ferrand. And I am driving to the hospital. Thankfully, it's not for me. But that doesn't mean that, that's any better. My mother-in-law, who I don't think she would want necessarily... Well, she actually wouldn't care that much if I told people. My mother-in-law, who is 81... Fine woman. Apparently, her heart has lost, or something has lost its pattern of how it's supposed to beat, and so she. I think she started having trouble, and she. Her heart was only beating like 40 beats a minute, of course, which is not enough to keep your blood pressure up and all that kind of stuff. And so she'd gotten really tired and they checked it. And of course, once they checked it, they realized, oh, this isn't good. So they went ahead and then at that point, I just happened to think, I'm trying to remember which hospital I'm going to. So they checked it, and then they took her into the hospital, and they checked her over, and I think they sent her home. And obviously my wife was a bit concerned. They said, let's just watch it and see. And then apparently they did watch it a little bit, and let me just do this. Sorry. hold on. Let me just call my wife real quick. Sorry, I should have done this before I started this. Be right back with you. Just driving along here. Be right back with you. Sorry. Hi, sweetie. Which hospital? Cocksouth. Okay, heading down that direction. Bye. Okay, I thought it was Cocksouth, but, it wouldn't be very good to get all the way down to Cocksouth and then realize it was St. John's. So, anyways, heart was beating slow, still was having problems with it yesterday, or today, took her back into the hospital, it was like at 34 or something like that, and so they kept her, I think they brought her in last night, kept her all day, has been monitoring her. They've got her scheduled for a pacemaker tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. So, needless to say, my wife is down with her, and I'm heading down there just to say hello and bring some flowers and do that kind of thing, which we'll come back around to that at the end of this. So, it's going to be about a 15-20 minute drive down there, so this should work out just about perfect. It's been a good week. It's been an interesting week. We have, we've had a house guest this week. Her name's Melissa, and she's working on her doctorate, so she dropped into town to do some work at the library and meet with her advisor and go over some things, take a few classes, yada, yada, yada. And so she's doing that. She's staying with us for about 10 days. And so we've had a lot of good conversations along the way. Still working along on my little book. That seems to be going fine. Made some good progress at work this week. Tonight is one of our pig in a python nights. We just keep sending more data through. When we run the recurring payments for missions, we run them once a month, and they grow every month, and they all go through on the same day. So I told the guys today, we're tossing another pig into the snake pit, and we're seeing if the python can unhinge its jaws enough to actually get this stuff processed. my insinuation being it would probably be a good idea not to keep doing it on the same day but break it up. But everybody's so busy that I haven't had a chance to make much progress on that. So we're putting a whole bunch of batches through tonight. And hopefully everything will go through and everything will be fine. Hopefully. But if it isn't, I'll go in tomorrow and figure out what we can do to make it fine. So, you know, that's the way it goes. This is episode 256. I got four more after this episode and we'll be at 5 years. So that's a big mark. And I have talked to my family a little bit about possibly doing a 4 or 5 broadcast where we all just get in the car and drive around. So they thought that was an interesting idea. We just have to find a topic, something that's relevant to us all. But we'll get that done. Anyways, because I probably will have a shorter podcast this week, which is good because the one last week was so long. I think that's the longest podcast I ever did, but that's what happens when your mouth just keeps running when you should stop talking. This week, I wasn't really sure what I wanted to talk on, but I had come across this article, and I will tell you right now that this article has caused its own little bit of backlash in the market. And in specifically from some of the feminist quarters, even though it was written by a woman who does marriage counseling, I think there's a little bit of sensitivity to these types of issues. And I think women in general, you know, I'm going to keep saying in general and on average and all those kind of words. And you need to take that as meaning I'm saying in general. I'm not saying we can't find people who this, you know, the in general and average doesn't apply to, because of course we are all human beings. We are all different. But kind of on the whole, I think we can make some kind of broad statements. I think in general, this is a topic that women aren't necessarily comfortable with, and specifically it's sex after marriage, because there are a whole plethora of jokes about, you know, after you get married then the sex disappears and all that kind of stuff, and I think there are, as I've said before, I think there's a reason for that. And I think it has a lot to do with what men versus women are really kind of looking to get from marriage and what their goals are in getting married. And the old saying is, as I've said before, that men trade safety and security for sex, and women trade sex for safety and security. And so there is, in that initial phase of courtship, there is a much greater interest in attracting, in making oneself appealing to your other mate. And as such, it's easier for women to fall into a pattern and for them to feel and them, you know, to be driven towards a much more physical attraction to a man that they are courting. Because inherently, women know that that's what makes men attracted to them. And so I think it's very natural and possibly even somewhat subconscious thing that happens where before marriage there appears to be much more agreement on the things that are quote-unquote, important in marriage. Once the marriage occurs and once the commitments are made, then that sort of changes a little bit, because from the woman's side, she is more interested in building a safe environment for children. She's more interested in building a safe environment for herself. And now that she has this man she has committed herself to, what enthuses her about him is really more about that safety and security than it is necessarily about having sex. And so what typically can happen is that couples who thought they were kind of on the same page when it came to their interest of sexual activity quickly discover that they're not on the same page anymore. And there was an article that was released last year that I saw come across, and I'm not sure I did a podcast on it or not, but it basically was a study that has since had some detractors against it in terms of how they produce their numbers. It was basically a study that said the more egalitarian a marriage is, the less sex there is. In other words, if the guy helps out with the chores and kind and generous and, you know, attempts to share the load and be sensitive to his wife's feelings, that in some ways that neuters his appearance to his wife. And so once that neuters that masculine appeal that he might have, then, you know, sex isn't necessarily a driver anymore. And there was a follow-on article to this that I thought, you know, had some interesting stuff in it. I'm certainly not going to go through the whole article, because I will be at the hospital far sooner than that. When I initially poured the article into my notes, it was 13 pages. But there were some interesting things, and one of the things that got the woman who wrote the article thinking was that her and her boyfriend had gone to a party, married couples in their 40s, and one of the husbands, in the course of the evening, had brought up porn, and that made the wives all nervous, and then another husband expertly kind of moved the topic on to something else. And it wasn't the hosting couple that had brought on this topic, or brought up this topic. And so she and her boyfriend, as they were riding home, she made the comment, "Yeah, I bet there's not going to be much sex in that household," referring to the people, to the guy who had brought up the porn. And the husband said, "Well, the least likely chance," or the boyfriend said, "the least likely chance that there's going to be any sex is the couple that hosted the party." And she thought, "What? Why?" And he said, "Because of the way they help each other out, because of the way, you know, they're real partners in their marriage." He said, "You know, studies have shown that if you have a real partnership in your marriage, you actually end up having less sex." Okay, well, whether those studies are actually valid or not, this marriage counselor did say that she had seen indications of that type of thing and was really trying in this article to explore why this is. She did bring up an interesting session that she, I think, had had with some of her people or had heard about it, that, you know, the husband and wife are talking, they're into a marriage counselor, and they're trying to figure out, you know, why this spark of attraction isn't there as much as it once was. And the wife says, "Well, you know, when I really feel attracted to you," and that means when she's really like, "Ooh, I want that, you know, I mean, this excitement," is she said when you come home from the gym and, you know, you're a little sweaty and, you know, you pull off your shirt and I can see your muscles and, okay, well, what is that? Well, he's a better protector. He's a better champion, you know, if he's real masculine and got muscles and rah-rah, you know. And so that triggers within her of, oh, I'm so glad I married him. And so, you know, the husband reminded the wife that he had just come home from the gym all hot and sweaty the day before, and he had ripped off his clothes and left them on the floor and, you know, got into taking the shower. And then she came in and she was upset because his clothes were on the floor and he hadn't vacuumed the day before. So then they got talking about that. He said, so in other words, you would have been more attracted to me if I would have whipped out the vacuum and done some vacuuming. And she said, well, no. She said, because the vacuuming would have probably killed the whole weightlifting vibe. Because there, you know, being able to run a vacuum doesn't necessarily increase the guy's standing as a protector. And so she went on and she actually gave a lot of different of these types of examples and talked about this whole issue of how we still in our society have gender-specific roles when it comes to household chores and how that those then feed into how we perceive our partner's gender identity and that how that then feeds into how, you know, that sexual desire. But my little small opinion on this is that when they talk about sexual desire and sexual attraction, what they're really talking about, both from the men's side and the woman's side, is sexual attraction in terms of something that gets me what I want. And I think it's very easy to sort of categorize sexual attraction as something that's just supposed to happen on its own that I'm not necessarily in control of. And so when it happens, I'm just swept up in the ecstasy of the moment. And then we just have this wonderful sexual experience and ha, see, this means that we're really in love. Ha. You know, but the problem is that sexual attraction is oftentimes based on flesh. When a man is sexually attracted to a woman, he's not necessarily thinking, oh, how wonderful it would be for her if I was to become her partner because I could take care of her. And I could provide for her, and we could build a good life together. A lot of times what he's thinking about when he's sexually attracted to her basically just comes down to, I just want to have intercourse with her. And what happens to her after that intercourse really isn't that much of a concern to him, to her, to him. From the woman's side, a lot of what we deem as sexual attractiveness comes in large part from, is this guy going to be a good provider and a good protector for me? And that's why the woman kind of gets worked up a little bit when he's sweaty and his muscles are showing, because he's strong and I'll be okay because he'll take care of me. And again, from her side, the first thing that she's thinking about is not how good of a brain does he have or how kind of a person he is. I mean, and you see that worked out easily in the whole bad boy vibe, you know, where women are attracted to bad boys. And because we know that, well, he can go all crazy on some guy that would try to harm me, and so he'd be a better protector for me. And so, but there again, that is driven by flesh. because she's not really seeing him as a human being. She's seeing him as something that she can use to achieve a means in her life. And so if you set aside the sexual attraction as something that is driven by the flesh, and you just sort of put that off to the side, then what remains in terms of physical intimacy? And I would submit to you that what remains is a potential for something that is much calmer, that is much deeper, that is much more pleasurable, both in terms of whether you're receiving pleasure or giving pleasure. That there is something that is joyous, where you are actually considering the other person's need. And, you know, my wife and I have kind of stumbled. I won't say we did it necessarily with any great planning, but my wife and I have kind of stumbled into a place where our physical intimacy is not necessarily about, oh, I just can't keep my hands off you, you know. I just have to attack you when you come home. You know, but it is about taking advantage of the moments that we have, understanding what's happening in each other's lives, planning for encounters, being kind and generous when those encounters don't necessarily pan out, being open and honest with each other about what we enjoy and what we'd like to try and experiment with. And where that has brought us is to really a wonderful place, where we schedule and set aside time to spend time together. And it really is lovely. And for neither of us is it essential in that moment to make sure that in every one of those encounters, one of us or both of us always gets exactly what they wanted from a needs perspective, but that it is enough. I just missed my turnoff because they've got the roads all torn up here and I didn't know where I was supposed to turn. I'm going to try to make a U-turn here and hopefully I won't get arrested. What is wonderful about that at the end of the day is that we are each aware of each other's needs and we do not necessarily feel obligated, like, oh, I gotta go and, you know, be with my wife tonight. But we take these wonderful opportunities to be with each other. And in those opportunities, we are kind and compassionate and fun, and it's good, you know? It's good. And within that, being egalitarian, being kind, being generous, actually does enhance that. It doesn't take away from that at all, because now we're no longer talking about something that is driven by flesh. We're talking about something that is driven by spirit, and it actually gets better the more kind and more gentle we are with each other. And so, for instance, today when my wife called me and said she was going to be down with her mom at the hospital, and she said, yeah, and she said, if you were, you know, gonna head down this way, you know, this was kind of came up quick, so mom doesn't have like anything in her room and stuff, so, you know, if you had time to stop by and get some flowers or something like that. That would, you know, that would be good. Well, you know what? I know that that is an opportunity for me to serve. That is an opportunity for me to express kindness to my wife. And so before I started this podcast, I ran over to one of the local stores. I asked for help from one of the ladies who was there in the floral department. She put together a very nice flowers with some balloons and stuff. And I'm going to struggle with them through the wind because we've got a thunderstorm coming in. I'm going to struggle with them through the wind and get them in there. Into the hospital and take them up to my mother-in-law, who's, you know, a very wonderful woman. I'm going to spend a little time up there. You know, yes, I have books to write. Yes, I have exercising to do. Yes, 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 yes. But what's important right now in this moment is to take this moment to show my wife that I am with her in her life. And that I am with her in all the paths that her life takes. And that she can trust me. You know, that I will do the right thing. I got tickled because I was talking to the lady. And at the, where I was getting the flowers. And so, and the lady was saying, well, I'm not sure these balloons and things are going to go. She said, but I think these will be okay if we do that. I said, they look great. I said, and my wife did mention balloons, so I have learned that I should listen to that and I should get balloons. And she laughed. She said, I wish my husband would listen to me a little more. Because there can be, even when you're going through all the motions of doing the things you're supposed to be doing as a husband, your wives can tell whether you're actually listening to them by your behavior. And so I think there's a couple of things that are going on here. First of all, I think our definition of what we're trying to recapture when we're saying they don't have sex as often and there's not as much sexual attraction, they're trying to recapture something that was all manufactured and faked by the flesh in the first place. And then also when they're saying, oh, how great it is that we're sharing tasks and everything, those tasks are being shared in such a way that they're not necessarily building the trust and the openness and the joy that they could build because we're allowing the flesh to poison those acts, that even while we're doing them, we are not reflecting the joy that they can cause. Because, A, we're not listening enough, or we're doing it in a way that doesn't necessarily, it's not necessarily the way our wives would like it to be done, but we're going to do it our way. You know, okay, well, the flesh can take our good intentions and our attempted good actions and poison it easily and brush it off. Well, yeah, you forgot to vacuum, but, you know, I mean, you vacuumed 3 days ago. Okay, but you can't do that, you know. Whatever you're supposed to be doing, whatever you say you're going to do, you got to do. So I got to take some flowers and balloons up to my mother-in-law, who is a wonderful woman and deserves them. I got to spend a little time with my wife, and then I'm going to go home and get done the things that I would be doing right now, and life is going to be good. And it's actually going to increase my wife's appreciation of me, and that in turn will increase the level of joy and depth that we have in our physical intimacy, because our physical intimacy is not based on flesh, it's based on spirit. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home to the hospital. Have a good week.